Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz Movies Podcast, only on the Oz Network.
Well, who are you going to call? Not us, because we're not punctual, but we are finally bringing you the long-awaited Empire, back-to-back Empire reviews. Not Empire of the Sun, not Empire Records, not the Empire Strikes Back, the lesser of them, the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire review. As we finished up our Ghostbusters month almost a month ago, and now we finally got around to watching this movie. And we're here to talk all good things, I'm sure, about Frozen Empire. My name is Colin, and some of the smartest people I know are morons.
And my name is Ben, and yes, Daddy.
That was the line in the movie?
When they go into the sex dungeon, and the girl was, like, obsessed with sex. The teen girl. I liked her better this movie.
I'm so disappointed, because, like, it has literally been a month since I've seen this movie. And I know there was a quote, and I think it was in that scene or one of the other scenes around that, with that what do you call him, the wishmaster, the key master, fire master,
the prodigy, I'm the fire starter. Yep, that guy.
There was a great line he had, and of course it left me at some point in the last week.
There was because I saw both the, I mean, when I say both these movies, we're recording them on the same day, releasing the same day, this and the other Empire movie.
Empire.
I saw them like literally back to back, and there was a quote in one of them where, again, I'm like, I should get my phone out and write that down.
Yeah.
But I didn't. So, yeah. No.
I probably did write it down on my phone and I just can't find it. But anyways, our quotes are mediocre because this movie's mediocre. it's not terrible. I don't know your opinion at all yet, but I saw this. I was more excited by the presentation they had on opening night. I actually got here. Gave away free posters of the movie.
Ooh, I thought they gave away free Dan Aykroyd. Hi, I'm Dan Aykroyd. I've been sitting on Colin's shelf for a month. What do you got, stickers, a condom, man? Oh, stickers.
Stickers. They basically had, you know, the Winnipeg chapter of Cable's crew, you know, people in costume, giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So big ordeal. And I saw the movie and I laughed a lot during it. I wasn't bored. I was entertained enough, but I instantly knew what the problem was of this movie, and I had to detail it to Jamie. She's like, that was really good. I'm like, was it? Was it really? Like, yes, it has the appearances of a good movie, but there is a major problem with this, which is way being bloated with characters, way too many characters, where it essentially left everybody with nothing to do, which was made worse by, I would rather you just have all these characters in the movie and give half of them nothing to do than to try to give 20 characters in one movie something to do. And that, I don't know, it soured me a lot in the movie, because I'm like, I could see how this would have been a lot better, because the right ingredients were there. It was more in the tone of the first two movies. It had good humor in it. It was funny. It had an original story for the first time in 35 years. But I'm just, it felt really flat to me.
Before I give my thoughts on it, I'm glad you had a good experience, because as you'll hear me in this one and then in the next review, I really just want to emphasize, I fucking hate watching movies in this city, because I swear to God, Sydney needs to learn how to watch a movie. I've been on this for like 6 days and wanting to let this out. I'm just saying right now. First of all, my bad. Didn't realize it was school holidays. Okay. My bad. So, you know, I've got myself to blame partly. I mean, at least I showed up.
Especially because of the restraining orders.
I did. At least I showed up on time for these movies and not 2 months early though. So that's a positive. But so I show up first this one, and you rock up in the cinema, and some parent has brought like not only their kids, but like every kid of their kid's friend and all this. So there's like 30 kids, and you're like, oh, fuck. And the cinema's divided into two. That half of the cinema where there's screaming kids running around, and myself and the other geeks who have waited a month to see this movie sitting by ourselves eating our brought in popcorn. So we're waiting for the movie to start. These kids are running around, And like the movie hasn't, the previews haven't even started yet. And they're playing just like cinema music, waiting for it. And these kids are screaming, running around. And one of them starts yelling, play Taylor Swift, play Taylor Swift. I'm like, oh my fucking God, this movie's going to be the worst thing I've ever probably seen in my life. And then, of course, these kids, do they shut up during the movie? No. Do the parents do anything to shut them up during the movie? No. And it gets even worse in Godzilla. Anyway, point is, that's over and done with. What did I think of this movie? I thought this was the best Ghostbuster movie ever made.
Are you serious?
And that's not saying much because I'm not the biggest fan. I mean, I didn't absolutely love this movie, but I enjoyed it the most. It was fun. It was lighthearted. It had absolutely lots of characters in it. And I think probably the first like 60 minutes of it was similar to Afterlife. It just dragged on. I'm like, okay, can we get on with something here? Like nothing's really happening in this movie. But there was enough entertaining bits on it where I'm like, okay, this is something different. I enjoy it. I think the legacy characters, they used just enough. They didn't shove. There's one moment with like Paul Rudd where they make it a bit like cringeworthy with the references when he starts like talking the song. And I'm like, oh, come on. But other than that, I left that going like pleasantly surprised. Like that and Ghostbusters 2. I'm like, they were enjoyable. I'd watch them over all the other Ghostbusters. So, yeah.
I'm glad you have an appreciation of Ghostbusters 2 because that's still my second favorite. Now, this will be my third favorite. And I've told multiple people since this came out, it is the best Ghostbusters movie in 35 years. But the bar has been so low.
But that's where I say, like, on mine, it's like, again, I'm not like a massive fan of the franchise. So this isn't going to be like, wow, I need to see that movie again. For me, it's like, of the five Ghostbusters movies, this is the best. Is this a franchise that I'll ever probably watch again? No. That's where my thought process sits on this franchise. So apologies to Ghostbusters fans. Sorry, Cable.
So on the way home, when I was explaining to Jimmy, this is the real problem with this movie. They got way too many characters and nobody has anything to do. So I didn't think there were too many characters. I'm like, all right, let's count them. We have four original Ghostbusters. We've got Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, Annie Potts. We've got six characters from last movie. We've got the two parents, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon. We've got the two kids, Egon's grandkids, and we've got the other two.
The son's barely in it again.
Yeah, but yet he's one of the ones they give his side plot to, which is like, why do we need this? So now we're at 10. Now, hero characters alone. Let's add on there. We've got the Keymaster, Firemaster, whatever, who is by far the best thing in this movie. I loved him. That's 11. Then we get Patton Oswalt. That's 12. Then we get a 13th hero character slash villain character with this ghost girl who I don't remember being part of any promotion. It's kind of an interesting idea, but it's you're at the point now where it's like every time you give screen time to one of these characters, you're robbing from somebody else. So what is the count at now? 13 lead characters. Now let's go to the villains. We have your actual monster villain. That's one. We have William Atherton, the guy from the first one coming back, just as I feared. It's literally no reason then we got to bring this guy back. Then we've got the other guy who, I last out into the hero characters. The guy with the glasses, which when I got to him, Jamie's like, wait, I sort of know who you're talking about. Who is he in the movie again? What was his name? I'm like, I don't remember his name. Like, what was his job? I'm like, he was the guy with the glasses. That
Podcast
was his job.
Was there as well.
But like, there are like 18 major characters in this movie. This is more bloated than a Star Wars movie or I think outside of Infinity War or Endgame, no Marvel movie has this many characters. And you literally have action scenes in this movie. Almost any moment of action in this movie is five or six characters all together. We're like, we got to press this button. Hold on, I'll press it with you. And you have like six people pulling one lever and 12 people pushing one button. Like, there is no greater example of how overbloated your cast is than you have to have them all pressing one button at the same time. And that is like what most of the action scenes in this movie are.
I mean, again, I don't disagree that it's overbloated, but I would say it's done. I mean, I think it just comes to a fact that the ones that have stuff to do have stuff to do. Paul Rudd has more stuff to do in this movie, which is good.
Does he?
I think so. Carrie Coon, like, they kind of, to me, they balance it out well. I mean, except for the kid with the green one, he's kind of wasted. What's his name? Kumail I can never say his name. Nanjiani. He's great. He's a great addition to it. I mean, when Podcast came in, because his balls have dropped and his voice is broken since the last one, I thought he was a new character. I'm like, oh, wait, that's Podcast? Okay, there he is. But, like, I think the stuff with the girl and, like, the undertones of a lesbian love story between two teenage girls, which, you know, Ben's going to like, I mean, I thought that was handled very well. And I thought, given that the ghost girl was a key element to the plot, which, again, it's one of these ones where, like, you could tell that was going to happen from a mile away.
Yeah.
I liked it. That was, like, you talk about a unique plot. That was something interesting. That was, you know, unique. And, like, it made the kids less less annoying this time around. But, like, I think the thing that I think they did really well with that was it's, like, yeah, I know I read some of the criticism was like, oh, they can't make them kiss because, you know, people are going to get offended because it's a Ghostbusters movie. I think they just, it's good that they do it in one of these natural ways with sort of like a gay love story where it's not shoved down your throat. Like, look, everyone, gay, we're being progressive. It was just kind of like, if you don't believe in that and you want to ignore that stuff real, you, hello, Colin, you can pretend that they're not really falling in love and things like that. But then you have like, the what's her face? Wasn't her name Lucky? I'm seeing her name was. She was like, what was the point of her in Afterlife? And I'm not just saying this because she just turned into a horny teenager in this one, but she became kind of interesting in this one. And I don't know, some of the characters, which definitely, yeah, there's a lot to deal with, but I feel this is more balanced than some of these other movies, like you talk about, like a Marvel or a Star Wars, or I'm thinking of Jurassic World Dominion, where, I mean, if you went on paper with that, that's got as many characters, but like, a lot of that, like particularly with the legacy cast, they're just in the background to say things like slide into my DMs. At least like Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson and Dan Aykroyd and Annie Potts feel relevant in this movie. They feel like they're there for a reason. There are people who pop up in this movie who I'm supposed to recognize from the first movie. And I'm like, oh, were they in the first movie? Were they?
Oh, yeah. Cool. Are we talking about the librarian, the guy, the library manager?
Yeah.
We got to bring back another character. How about everybody loves the library manager from the first one?
I was expecting Rick Moranis. I thought that was going to be the one which they were going to save for this, but sadly.
Yeah. No Sigourney Weaver.
No Sigourney.
Yeah, sad. Yeah. Like I agree with you. I think that the legacy characters, and this isn't just, oh, they do such a better job because we're familiar with these characters, because Ben couldn't care less about the legacy characters. They actually do a good job with them, especially with the whole age thing that they have with Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, you know?
Ernie Hudson's this is his most relevant role of all of them. Like, he actually feels like relevant to the plot.
That was sort of the tease at the end of Afterlife. Like, this was going to be him kind of pulling this together. I'll disagree with Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon for one major reason. I think that they're both enjoyable in this movie. I think that Paul Rudd is all around more entertaining. He completely disappears from the movie for the second half, kind of like he did in the last one where he just turned into possessed man. But what's missing here is that the chemistry that they have, that sort of back and forth banter between the two adult characters, you could not pinpoint, if you hadn't seen the first movie, you could not pinpoint these characters are in a relationship if it wasn't for the fact they had like this father storyline. Like, I wanted more of those two together, which we don't get in this one. And then for the ghost girl love story, my biggest problem with that was that it was played so straight when everything else is so straight.
Look at Colin trying to, oh, these two lesbians should be straight. Disgusting.
But it was so, the tone was so serious, which fit with Afterlife, but doesn't fit with this movie. There's a radical change in tone from Afterlife to this one, where this is more goofy like the originals. People praise the original Ghostbusters. Like, it's not about anything. It's just a fun movie, and that's kind of what this was. And then the other part is, when they actually have the two characters kind of come together, it is so riddled with plot holes that I'm like, none of this makes sense, and you trying to explain it makes even less sense. And again, it was one character too many. I wish that, it's like they had three movies worth of material, and like, we got to cram it all into this one because we don't know if we're going to get another one. And who knows, maybe they're not going to get another one. But I mean, people seem to enjoy it. I have a feeling, though, this is going to be one of these movies that 10 years from now, people are going to look back on. They're going to be like, was that really as good as we thought? Because like, that's the big story that's been going around for a month, is critics hate this movie, but audiences are loving it almost as much as the original. I guarantee in 10 years, they're not going to love this almost as much as the original.
I mean, look, again, I have no absolute bearing on this franchise, so it doesn't bother me either way. I was just saying about the relationship between Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon. I disagree. I think, like, just it feels they're in a relationship. This is just what couples are like after a certain point, Colin. Maybe you need to look into this. It's normal couples are like. Like, it just feels like they've been together for a while, and they're kind of, like, having debates over how to handle children because Paul Rudd's the fun guy, and, like, you've got to be hard on kids sometimes, so I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that completely. But, like, again, I'm not coming into this going, like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Again, like, if you looked at my letterbox, I think I only still gave this 3 stars, which is what I gave the second one, which is the highest I've given any Ghostbusters movie. Again, I'm not going to, you know, I saw it once and that'll do, Ben. But I just found it enjoyable. Although I just think it does, like, as I said, like, dragged on, and like the whole, I mean, I remember what drew me into this trailer initially. I think I said this a month or so ago, was when I saw it and I'd never seen a trailer for this movie. And you see New York getting like taken over, the, like, oh, end of the world movie. That kind of stuff is like, happens really quickly. And it's like right at the end of the movie. I want more of that. I want more of my city destruction and the villain. Yeah, there's plot holes there. And like, I mean, she became a ghost to be a lesbian. And then that made the thing become, I know that's a spoiler probably, but whatever. It's a month old.
I mean, we're talking about the science behind how these two characters actually interact, which is like, whoa, this is like so riddled with plot. Based on your own description, you've written your own plot hole in here. But like, that's something that would be,
I mean, it's a Ghostbusters movie. Are we really need to talk about the science of it? I mean,
well, but like, the thing is, Dan Aykroyd, especially in the first two, he prided himself on being Mr. Expert. And I'm sure he brought some to this script, like, because he sort of has that background, entire family background, and like the supernatural and actually knowing about all this stuff. But yeah, like the first two, I feel like they hide the things that would create plot holes. This one kind of creates things that create plot holes. I didn't find a lot of consistency with the characters. I think that was the other thing I was sort of disappointed, because I think Phoebe was so good in Afterlife, and she literally feels like a completely different character in this one. And it's going to easily be explained as like, oh, well, she's an older character now. Characters don't change that much just because they age, you know? Like, this is like, if we were to follow up with, if we do a proper follow up with Tim and Lex in, you know, The Lost World or Jurassic
Let's
Park 3.
Let's do it.
We really should. but like, there's still going to be something there. And it really didn't feel like there was anything there that connected her to life. She's still easily the best of the young actors and characters in this movie. But it doesn't feel like the same character as the first one. And one thing I actually thought was interesting, and I didn't even realize it, funny, is much as I was into Ghostbusters and even still excited about this movie, despite my letdown in the last couple, is that I didn't realize that Jason Reitman wasn't directing this one. I mean, he's still writing it, but him and Gil Keenan, who is his co-screenwriter, flip roles on this one. Like, we're going to write the script together on Afterlife and I'll direct it, said Jason Reitman. What if I direct the second one, said Gil Keenan. But Gil Keenan is directing this one, not Jason Reitman. And he made this feel more Ghostbusters-like to me. Like, I almost feel like Jason Reitman was trying to fight against what Ghostbusters' legacy was and do something completely different. And I actually thought he succeeded with that until it became a remake of the original. Whereas with this, what I did enjoy is that it was doing something slightly different. You get a new monster that, whether it's properly explained or not, whether, you know, it's threatening in any way, it doesn't really matter. It's something original. It's something unique. You get some cool visuals in this. You advance the technology without it being, we got a million new gadgets, you know, that we're not going to properly explain. Seeing like the firehouse, and then Ernie Hudson has his big, this is where I invest my real money, the R&D department of the Ghostbusters. I really like that stuff. And I'm like, I feel suckered in, because I've kind of been let down by three Ghostbusters movies in a row, but yet they're doing things where I'm like, well, I like the direction. Maybe if you take it a little bit more in this direction, I'll like the next one a little bit more. So, I mean, I'm not writing off the franchise or anything, and I still did enjoy this stuff. I'm not going to be binning this movie, but it was too much. And like, trim the cast down for the next one. Let some of these people have cameos. Patton Oswalt, like, why is he even in this movie? You could have accomplished that same thing by just putting one of your characters in there, you know? It's just, we need to introduce, it's like, they had a bunch of actors that the studio signed on and said, they want to be in Ghostbusters. And then Reitman and Keenan are like, what are we going to do with all these people? It's like, well, we need these actors for the star power. And like, well, I guess we're splitting up this one character into three now. You could have combined Pat Oswalt and Kumail Nanjiani into one character. You could have done three characters. The guy with the glasses that nobody can remember what his point is in the movie. All three of those could have been one character.
2 points. It's kind of a bit like the Star Wars and Jurassic World franchises when you think of the fifth one. And when I say fifth one, I'm talking about Last Jedi, turns of the sequels after, like, obviously including the prequels and that. Whereas, like, it's like the director has done something different compared to the other ones. And, I mean, again, I haven't really read the reviews for this one, and I don't think this is quite like a Last Jedi or a Fallen Kingdom where everybody's kind of very anti this movie. But, I mean, you and I seem to be on the very thin minority of people who liked what they did on Fallen Kingdom is something a little bit different, whereas we're definitely on the Last Jedi page where it's like, oh, that's kind of crap. But then it's also, I think, you talk about using all these characters, and when obviously we get to talking to our Godzilla Kong one very soon, I think what that franchise seems to not do is reuse their characters. They seem to always introduce new people into each of their films and then, that'll do. We don't need to bring them back. So let's just bring new people in every single time. Whereas Ghostbusters, it's kind of like, well, we're building up our cast. So by like film 7, they're going to have like a cast of like 80. So, which again, like has its pros and cons. I've got many criticisms in the Kong movies that they don't do that. That it's kind of like, well, where is Aaron Taylor Johnson? He's not Bond yet. He should be, you know, mourning his dad. Bryan Cranston's probably still alive somewhere. You know, it's just like they seem to forget about things and move on in that franchise. Whereas this one, it's like, remember that random character from the first one that you enjoyed for 3 seconds? Well, we're going to bring them back. Which didn't the lions from the library come alive in one of the Ghostbusters movies already? No. I'm making that up. Okay.
Oh, that was a cool sequence. I like that.
I've been to that point. I'll touch the lion for you in a couple of months' time when I'm back there.
You
again.
Do that.
I will.
I don't really have much else to add on this movie.
No original song. Where's my McKenna Grace and my Fallout Boy song in the credits? I'm disappointed.
I was reading up, and I don't think this was in the credits. I think that this might just be something where they released a promotional thing, but apparently they have like a Japanese girl group that did a theme song for this movie. This will be like the first one without a proper theme song.
Because I'm going to say, since we did Afterlife, like I Shazammed the McKenna Grace song that they use in the credits for Afterlife, and it's not Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr. or Fall Out Boy and Missy Elliott, but it's kind of catchy. It kind of gets on you a little pop up in my shuffle. I'm like, oh, this is that McKenna Grace song. I'm like, this is all right. So
it's like the Bobby Brown one, you know, you'll forget about it, but then you'll be like, yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Typical fashion. I feel like I've talked down this movie more than I typically would. My issues with this movie are things that don't seem to be brought up that much. Although I have seen some of the reviews seem to be critical of like how big the cast is. But overall, I mean, I still enjoyed it enough. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to checking it out again. It was the most fun I've had watching a Ghostbusters movie in 35 years. I'm not going to bin it, but I can't buy this movie because it is still very flawed. And I don't even know, did you buy even Ghostbusters 2?
I bought Ghostbusters 2, so I'm going to buy this one as
well. Wow, so you are now two buys. So we are even for buys on Ghostbusters movies, I think.
And you binned one. I didn't bin any of them. So, and I'm assuming like, because I cheat and look at your views now on Letterboxd, let's be honest. But
I need to hold them off.
Yeah, I need to stop doing that because it makes these less fun. But I mean, I actually put a rankings list of my Ghostbusters movies up last night before I went to bed. So yeah, I've ranked my Ghostbusters movie, and Ghostbusters fans would hate me. So forget I ever did these, because this is my number one, followed by Ghostbusters 2, followed by Ghostbusters 2016, followed by the original, followed by Afterlife. I'm sorry, but I have the women's Ghostbusters better than the original only just. I apologize, but I don't apologize at the same time because I enjoyed it and I'm not a sexist bastard like all you misogynistic Ghostbusters fans.
I am excited to move on to our next one because I've also been waiting on that for almost a month. So that will be, I don't know.
They're releasing at the same time. We'll just release them both in the same day. It's all good.
All right. So if you're listening to this after you listen to Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, you already know what our second Empire movie of the day is. That'll be tomorrow. And as well, we're going to have 24 episodes coming up, and our movies, we're about ready to start Planet of the Apes month. To start this week. Yes.
Two more weeks, we're nearly there.
2 weeks. So Planet of the Apes month will start after that. And sadly, we're going to be starting with the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes. But tune into that I'll have just as many angry rants as I had during the last 3 Ghostbusters episodes we've done when we get to the Planet of the Apes. That'll be it. My name is Colin, and who are you going to call?
I was going to say the same thing, so I may as well. My name is Ben, and Ghostbusters!
Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.
Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favorite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah.
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon. That's right. Your favorite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.